This is the sixth day of this January 2011 session. 7 day session. 7 day Rohatsu session. I'm going to take up a koan today. Before we read the koan, I'd like to read a passage that I've not read in Taisho for 2 or 3 years. It's related to koans, but there's the word koan isn't anywhere in it. There is a passage that I have also read in Taisho, that Roshi Kaplo used to read in Taisho, about a master who, in describing the function of a koan, compared it to the case of a blind man walking with a cane. He completely relies on the cane to get along. And then the koan would be like coming up to the blind man, knocking his cane away from him, turning him around 3 times and throwing him down. Now he's left with nothing to lean on, nothing to rely on, except his own intuition. And he has to find his way in the dark. It's a really fine passage that points to the need in Zen to reach a state of not knowing. That's really what koans are for. They're to dissolve our notions, the ideas and concepts that get in the way of our direct apprehension of reality, to free us of these mind-forged manacles, as Yeats says somewhere, and in order to free us. But in order to get there, we have to enter this darkness, and we have to reach a place of not knowing, because that's where the money is, the not knowing. Socrates said, wisdom begins in not knowing. Well, this story is... It was written by a naturalist, or rather, it's a story about a naturalist who taught at Harvard in the 1850s. His name was Louis Agassiz, and one of his students wrote the following: "Reading up on him years ago, I discovered that he would, when taking on a new grad student or assistant, hand the prospective student a pickled, evil-smelling, dead fish, which was personally selected by the master from wide-mouthed jars which lined his shelves. The fish was placed before the student in a tin pan. He was to look at the fish, he was told, whereupon Agassiz would leave, not to return until later in the day, if at all." And then here we are. This is one of these, the words of one of these students, a student by the name of Samuel Scudder, who later became an entomologist. This is how he described the process: "In 10 minutes, I had seen all that could be seen in that fish. Half an hour passed, an hour, another hour. The fish began to look loathsome. I turned it over and around, looked it in the face, ghastly, from behind, beneath, above, sideways, at three-quarters view, just as ghastly. I was in despair. I could not use a magnifying glass. Instruments of all kinds were prohibited. My two hands, my two eyes, and that fish. It seems a most limited field. I pushed my finger down its throat to feel how sharp the teeth were. I began to count the scales in the different rows until I was convinced that that was nonsense. At last, a happy thought struck me. I would draw the fish. And now, with surprise, I began to discover new features in the creature. When Agassiz returned and listened to Scudder recount what he had observed, his only comment was that the young man must look again. And now we're back to Scudder's account. I was mortified. Still more of that wretched fish. But now I set myself to the task with a will and discovered one new thing after another. The afternoon passed quickly, and when, toward its close, the professor inquired, "Do you see it yet?" "No," I replied, "I certainly do not. But I see how little I saw before." The following day, having thought of that fish most of the night, Scudder had a breakthrough. "The fish," he announced to Agassiz, "has symmetrical sides with paired organs." Of course," Agassiz said, obviously pleased. Scudder asked, "What do I do next?" Agassiz replied, "Oh, look at your fish." The lesson lasted 3 days and nights. "Look, look, look." Scudder later termed this experience a legacy the professor has left to me, as he has left to many others, of inestimable value, which we could not buy, with which we cannot part. Our koan, our fish today, is from the Blue Cliff record. This is number 91. The title is Enkan and the Rhinoceros Fan. And I'm going to leave it in the... These are all Japanese people in this koan. Or excuse me, these are all Chinese people, but I'm going to use the Japanized names. It was just too much. There's so many people in here. Try to sort out who all the Chinese names, and not to mention pronouncing them halfway decently. So one day, Enkan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros horn fan." The attendant said, "The fan is broken." Enkan said, "If the fan is broken, bring the rhinoceros to me." The attendant made no reply. And then we have a series of comments by later masters. This is an honored tradition or convention in Zen, is for later masters commenting on a koan or a dialogue, or make usually provocative comments about it. It can be very rich because the masters often take the other side. Every time we make a statement, the statement is limited. We cannot encompass the truth. We can only point in the direction of it, but the very nature of words is limiting. As soon as we use words, box ourselves in a sense. So what often you see in Zen literature is where if one master in a dialogue says, let's use an exact, just come up with an example. What is the greatest thing? Our true nature, our true self. Then a later master, 100 years later, might say, well, for my part, I would say it's no self. Now we know from our Hakuin chant that we recite each day that this true self is no self. And so you can just bring it out in different ways. Another one is where Basso, great Chinese master Ma Zu, when he was asked about the Dharma, he said, this very mind is Buddha. And then later, another student asked him, and he said, not mind, not Buddha. So these later masters just playfully, mischievously would sound like they were contradicting or adding other material to it. But usually it was with a certain twinkle in their eye, you can be sure. So, bring me the rhinoceros horn fan. The fan is broken. If the fan is broken, bring the rhinoceros to me. And then Tosu, at a later time, he took the role of the attendant who had made no reply, and he said, I do not refuse to bring it out, but I fear the head and horn will be imperfect. To which Secho commented, I want that imperfect one. And then again another master, Sekiso, said, again in place of the attendant, if I return it to the master, then I won't have it. And Secho always gets the last word because he compiled these koans. he says, the rhino is still there. And then another master later drew a circle and wrote the character for rhino in it. And Secho commented, why didn't you bring it out earlier? And then yet another master, again speaking in place of the attendant, said, the master has grown old. He should employ someone else to attend him. And then Secho wraps up the whole series by saying, long labor lost. So there are so many characters in this koan that we're only going to comment, read the biographical material for the first one, the principal, Enkan. His real Chinese name is Yang Guan. He lived in the Great Tang Dynasty. His dates are 750 to 842. And he was one of the many disciples, enlightened disciples of Ma Zu, who we just mentioned, who famously said, this very mind is Buddha. Ma Zu was the Dharma grandson or great-grandson of the sixth patriarch, the legendary sixth patriarch. And the records tell us that Ma Zu had 139 enlightened disciples. Well, Yang Guan, or Enkan, was one of them. As a young novice, he had become accomplished in the teaching of the Vinaya. We're reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. He had taken up the study of the Vinaya, which is the school of Buddhism that emphasizes the precepts and more upright conduct, moral conduct. And he was ordained under a Vinaya master. Later he moved to a place where he first heard Ma Zu. The only other information we're given is that it's recorded that this Enkan had an unusual appearance, and that Ma Zu, upon seeing him for the first time, recognized him as a great vessel. after Mazu died, Engkan or Yangguan moved around, lived in different places, and then became the abbot of a big temple. A couple of three dialogues about Engkan. A monk asked him, "What is the true body of Vairochana Buddha?" Engkan said, "Bring me that pitcher of water." The monk brought Engkan the pitcher. Engkan then said, "Now put it back where it was before." The monk returned the bottle to where it had been. Then he asked his previous question again. Engkan said, "The ancient Buddhas are long gone." Here's another one. A scholar monk came to visit Engkan, who asked him, "What do you do?" The monk said, "I expound the Flower Garland Sutra." This is a sutra, apparently, where there's a lot of talk about different Dharma realms. And Engkan said, "How many different Dharma realms are there?" The monk said, "Broadly speaking, there are limitless Dharma realms, but they can be reduced to four types." So the monk was delighted to be able to launch into a lecture. Yangguan, or Engkan, held his whisk upright and said, "What type of Dharma realm is this?" The monk sank into reflection. You can see him stroking his beard there. Yangguan said, "Knowing by thinking, resolving through consideration, these are the strategies of a devil house. A single lamp, when it's put beneath the sun, it really isn't bright." Here's just one more. Another Zen master named Fa Kong came to visit Engkan and inquired about some ideas expressed in the sutras. Engkan answered each question in turn. When they had finished, Engkan said, "Since the master arrived here, I haven't been able to play the host." Fa Kong, the visiting master, said, "I invite the master to take the role of host." Engkan said, "It's late today, so let's go back to our quarters and have a rest. Tomorrow, come here again." And Fa Kong went back to his room, and the next morning, Engkan sent a novice monk to invite him for another meeting. When Fa Kong arrived, Engkan looked at the novice monk and said, "This novice can't do anything. I told him to get Zen Master Fa Kong. Instead, he went and got this temple maintenance man." Fa Kong was speechless. I have a little story about Roshi Kapo. Many, many years ago, maybe, early 70s, the doorbell rang at Arnold Park, and I answered the door, and it was a visitor like many who come at odd times, and we have to steer them to an introductory workshop. But this young woman, I invited her to step in the door, and I talked a little bit about the center and the founder, Roshi Kaplow, and just as I was saying that, he walked through the link on his way over to the Zendo, not in his robe, just in his regular clothes, kind of baggy pants and all. And as he went through, I was in mid-speech, and I said, actually, that was he who just went through. And she said, oh, I thought that was the janitor. And she kind of blushed. And I later told Roshi, as any good attendant would, and he looked kind of serenely and said, best compliment anyone ever paid me. Well, we don't have time to read the material we have on these others. These are all distinguished masters, Tosu, Sekiso, Shifuku, Hofuku. So they have a lot of experience behind their comments. So, back to the case. One day, Enkan called to his attendant, bring me the rhinoceros horn fan. Various commentaries say that there was literally a fan, one of these fans that you open up that go way back to forever in Asia. It had the picture on it, a painting of a rhinoceros gazing at the moon. Now, we can understand the rhinoceros as kind of a stand-in for the ox. The ox, of course, in Zen, represents our true mind, our enlightened nature. There's a little background material here. This koan in the Blue Cliff record also happens to appear in the Book of Serenity, the Shoyo Roku. There are quite a few, actually, that repeat, that are common to the different collections. And this is a comment by the man who compiled the Book of Serenity. And he talks about someone else who's not in the koan, a Xuanzong, who was originally a member of the imperial family of the Tang Dynasty, but he became ordained as a monk, and he was hiding as a monk, apparently. There's no explanation here. Is this the original material? That while hiding as a monk, was going to call on Master Enkan. The master knew about this beforehand and told the director of duties to tell everyone not to talk at random and to stop any wayward doings. In other words, get it together, you guys. The member of the royal family is coming here, and see if you can keep it taut. The future emperor, that's Xuanzong, stayed there for a long time, then suddenly left. The master said to him privately, the time has come. Don't stay curled up in the mud. And he also entrusted to him future responsibility for the Dharma. In the sixth year after the former Emperor Wu had destroyed the teaching of Buddhism, this is this notorious persecution of Buddhism in the ninth century, Xuanzong had restored it. The master Enkan had a strong influence in that. The emperor was going to summon the master to the palace to provide for him, but the master had already long passed on. Well, that was a kind of a little tangent, but let's go back to Enkan calling to his attendant, bring me the rhinoceros horn fan. So part of the Doksan process for a student working on a koan like this is to speak on behalf of Enkan, to put in his or her own words, the student's own words, what Enkan was really saying to the attendant. Bring me the rhinoceros horn fan. The attendant said, the fan is broken. Well, that's a more difficult point to understand than the first. The fan is broken. This attendant is no beginner. Attendants were usually not beginners at all. That's why they were given that privileged position of serving the master. So we can be sure the attendant here is not slumping and dejectedly confessing to being a loser. So what is he saying? The fan is broken. But Enkan won't have anything of it. He says, if the fan is broken, bring the rhinoceros to me. Bring the rhino itself to me. And at that, the attendant made no reply. Coming to awakening is hard enough, but what's really hard is then letting go of any notion of having attained anything. The great Da Wei, who we mentioned earlier in this session, great Chinese master, once said, having some attainment is the jackal's yelp. Having no attainment is the lion's roar. To have no trace of self-consciousness about having any acquired, have gotten anything, having won any prize, having attained anything, this is a very advanced state. This is what was meant earlier in Sishin when I quoted this Japanese saying, nothing distinguishes the enlightened person. Nothing distinguishes the enlightened person who has thoroughly cleansed himself of any stink of attainment. Having no attainment is the lion's roar. Japanese Zen master Dogen famously said, there is no beginning to practice and end to enlightenment, or there is no beginning to enlightenment and end to practice. He used the term practice enlightenment. He might have said enlightenment practice. This takes us back to our readings before today in Taisho of sudden attainment and gradual cultivation. The cultivation after awakening is necessary to polish the traces that linger after awakening. there's a comment in the Book of Serenity about this statement, the fan is broken. This master says, the fan is broken. When has so much as a bit of hair been moved? Before when he didn't bring it out, when had it ever been lacking either? And now that it's brought out, it's still never increased. This exchange that we just read reminds me of one involving Joshu, where a master once came to him and said, when not a single thing is brought, then what? Jiaozhou said, put it down. The master said, if I don't bring a single thing, what should I put down? And Jiaozhou said, all right, then carry it out. Another version of it is, if I don't have a thought in my mind, what about that? Put it down. Well, how can I do that? There's no thought in the mind. All right, then, carry it out. If the fan is broken, bring the rhinoceros to me. And it ends with the attendant making no reply. Silence in these dialogues, silence is something that can be understood in different ways. It can be a knowing silence, the silence of the mind at rest, or it can be a silence of not knowing what to say, rummaging around in one's mind and being paralyzed. Or is Jackie Gleason used to say, humana, 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 humana. When his wife caught him in some kind of lie or something. And then what the koan picks up the later comments by these other masters. So first Tosu. And he said, in place of the attendant, I don't refuse to bring it out, but I fear the head and horn will be imperfect. To which Secho comments, I want that imperfect one. That's what I want to say to people who are hesitant to come to Doksan because they haven't got it all together on that particular Doksan. I want that imperfect one. It's a big mistake to stay away for Doksan after Doksan because you're not satisfied with the condition of your mind. Just going to Doksan can change that. Give the teacher a chance to help you in some way instead of just holing up in the zendo and waiting until you're satisfied with that everything is just the way you want it to be. It's never going to be perfect. Awakening itself is never perfect, I suppose, except maybe with the Buddha himself, who we're told had supreme perfect enlightenment. But I think the Japanese were onto something when they say even Shakyamuni was only halfway there. The notion of perfection is an ocean. It's an abstraction. Perfectionism is a neurotic trait. And yet there are people who take pride in thinking themselves as perfectionists. The very notion of perfection as an ideal is itself an imperfection. There's no such thing in the real world as perfection. And yet it's not seen in our culture, it's not recognized as a neurotic trait to be a perfectionist. Well, often it's not. Sometimes it is. I know someone who does psychological evaluations for a police department, and as part of the psychological evaluations, the candidate is asked, what would you say is one of your shortcomings? And the idea is to see if the candidate is so defended that he or she will not be able to come up with anything, so out of touch or dishonest that they aren't forthcoming about it, something or other in their personality or their character that is less than perfect. And this person told me that it's a real red flag when, in response to that, the candidate asked, you know, what might be one of your shortcomings? And they say, well, I'm a perfectionist. Well, isn't that precious? You know, if I have one flaw, it's that nothing is too good for me. Nothing is good enough for me. Another version, another red flag is when they say, well, I'm kind of a workaholic. Of course they think that's what employer wouldn't want to hear, that you're just working around the clock all the time. I do not refuse to bring it out, but I fear the head and horn will be imperfect. Dogen's Dharma heir, Keizan Zenji, who provides a verse for each of the koans in the Book of Serenity, he had this very famous verse. Though you find clear waters ranging to the vast blue sky of autumn, how can that compare with the hazy moon of a summer night? Most want it pure white, but sweep as you will, the mind will never be empty. The notion of a mind with no thoughts is itself a notion, right? It's just that, another abstraction. And the notion of supreme, perfect, absolute, perfect enlightenment that is fully integrated into one's life, so there are no flaws, one is a God-like figure, is also an abstraction. And then Sekiso throws his hat into the ring, and again, in speaking in place of the attendant, said, if I return it to the master, then I won't have it. What kind of thing could it be that you could hand it back and forth? Setcho comments in response to this, the rhino is still there. Where could it go? This mind that is beyond coming and going, beyond birth and death, beyond arising and ceasing, beyond change. And then Shifuku, another world-famous master in ancient China, drew a circle and wrote the character for rhino in it. The circle, we know, is as close as anyone in Zen has ever found to represent this mind of formless form. There was a period, I read in one of the commentaries on this, there was a period when masters would, in their own, each in his own way, would draw a circle with a picture of a rhino in it. It strikes me as kind of redundant. This circle, called an enso, at the end of the hall here in the, outside the zendo, there is a rhino in it. It's just invisible. There's one paragraph from Chinul's book that we read from before today, question and response, that relates to this question. Just for those of you hearing this as a recording, Chinul is this great 12th century Korean Zen master whose teachings we've been reading from here before now in Taisho. Question, when the true mind appears, how do we know that it has matured without obstructions? Chinul, although the true mind might manifest to those who are training on the path, if they have not yet eliminated their habit energies, they will occasionally lose their mindfulness when they encounter matured objects. It is like a herdsman who has trained his ox to follow obediently but still would not dare to lay down his whip or tether. He must wait until the ox's mind is fully trained and its pace is steady, so that even if he guided it through a field of tender young rice sprouts, it would not harm the rice paddy. Only then would he dare to loosen his grip. At that stage, even though he does not use the whip or tether, the ox would not injure the young sprouts. It is the same for one on the path. Even after he has realized true mind, he has to strive to maintain and nurture that realization in order to obtain great power and function. Then and only then will he be able to benefit sentient beings. And then, after Shifuku drew a circle and wrote the character for a rhino in it, Setcho commented, saying, "Why didn't you bring it out earlier?" Here, too, I see Secho saying this with a little smile playing on his face. And then finally Hofuku said, "The master has grown old." This here again in place of the attendant. "The master has grown old. He should employ someone else to attend him." And finally, Secho's comment, "Long labor lost." Hopefully someone today or tomorrow can bring me the rhinoceros horn fan. One of the many rhinoceroses sitting here, whole and complete, huge, powerful, lacking nothing. Time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows.